I'm Alex Smith. Welcome to Radio EcoShock. Now and then, just one dedicated person can put the spotlight on a dangerous chemical. Every day, some of us wear or use products made with this toxic process. Few people know fabrics like rayon are made from forests boiled down by dangerous chemicals. So are cellophane and dish sponges. That person could be Dr. Paul David Blank. He's a real doctor and a professor of medicine at the University of California in San Francisco. The story and the warning come in Paul's new book, Fake Silk, The Lethal History of Viscose Rayon. Paul, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Glad to be here.
What put a practically unknown chemical like carbon disulfide in your sights?
Well, I'm an occupational medicine physician by training and also a medical toxicologist. So in that narrow field, people have heard of carbon disulfide, partly because it's such a powerful and fascinating toxic substance.
What is it really? I mean, is it a dust or a powder or what?
No, it's a liquid. It's a solvent. It's a very elegant little molecule, just one carbon and two sulfur elements linked together, and doesn't occur very much in nature except in the mouths of volcanoes and certain other rarefied situations. So essentially a synthetic chemical, but it has a long history. It goes back to the 18th century.
Well, let's talk about the fake silk in your book title. What is rayon and what makes it distinct from other industrial fibers we've heard about like nylon or polyester?
Well, first of all, it's the granddaddy of all these fibers. It really predates all of the petroleum-based synthetics, including nylon, which came onto the scene in the late 1930s. But rayon was invented at the turn of the last century, just before 1900. And unlike the petroleum-based products, it's based on cellulose from plants, mostly wood pulp. That's all fine and good, but the key ingredient in making all that happen is this chemical called carbon disulfide.
I know that a lot of high-fashion designers, names we'd all know, use rayon. Paul Blank, what do they like about it, and why do consumers like it?
Well, consumers like rayon because it has silk-like properties, if it's pure, and also because it can be mixed with a lot of other fibers and give interesting blends. There's not a hazard to consumers by wearing it, so there's no risk there, and that's one of the reasons why people have not paid much attention to what happened to the workers who have made it for the last 120 years. In terms of fashion designers, it's people love to play around with new stuff, and there have been times also where shortages of other materials or political considerations promoted the use of rayon. So during the German occupation of France, when the Germans were quite interested in promoting the rayon industry, there was quite a push for French high design to use lots of rayon and rayon blends.
Well, let's talk about the known health impacts of carbon disulfide as used in the production of rayon and cellophane and other industrial products. Why don't we begin with the brain effects? I'm not really talking about mental health here, but just what does it actually do to the brain?
Well, the mechanism of its toxicity is still a matter of research debate. It's actually hard to tease out the mental health effects from other effects on the brain because, in fact, the mental derangement that it causes is one of its most stunning effects. And probably it interferes with various metabolic pathways and is able to cause these problems through that mechanism. So it was first noted very early on after it was first introduced industrially, not in rayon because rayon didn't exist, but in the rubber industry where it was used as part of an alternative vulcanization process, that the workers would go insane. In fact, one of the rubber factories was famous for having iron bars on its second floor windows because so many workers had a tendency to jump out and kill themselves. Also was quite recognized to cause sexual proclivity in those exposed. That was later followed by impotence. So it had sort of a two-phase response.
What about heart problems? Is that why so many rayon workers died young?
later on, and by later on, I mean it wasn't really until the 1960s that it became appreciated that long-time lower-level exposure, long-term lower-level exposure to carbon disulfide could, in fact, cause premature heart attack and premature stroke. That was difficult to study because it required some of the modern epidemiologic techniques that only came into the fore in the decades following World War II.
And as a sidelight, I found an astounding note in your book that the workers' compensation system in the United States doesn't seem to be actually written to protect the workers. It seems to protect the employers. No matter how egregious the damage or the death, the worker can't sue the employer. Why not?
Well, that's just standard in workers' compensation law. You cannot sue your employer. You're confined to stick to the compensation monetary scheme that's written into the law in the various states. If you're a consumer and made ill by a product or what's called a third-party relationship, then it's possible to sue, but not as an direct employee. So, in fact, for the asbestos industry, their Achilles heel has not been people who actually worked for the asbestos mining and milling companies. It was for secondary users who bought asbestos from a primary source.
Donald Trump has highlighted the flight of manufacturing jobs away from America and towards other countries in Mexico and Asia. Where were the major rayon factories of America and Europe located, and why do you think they closed down one after another?
First of all, they were the first to flee to other sites. So we're talking about the 1960s and 70s, but they were originally located in Pennsylvania and then fled to the southern United States where there was less unionization of the workers. And that's been a classic in the textile industry generally. So later on, they were more concentrated in Virginia and Tennessee, North Carolina, and Georgia. And then these were mostly part of multinational corporations, which is another classic manifestation of this industry from even the years before World War I, they were cartels. And then between the wars, they were really interlocking directorates of various companies. The biggest American manufacturer was called the American Viscose Corporation, which was wholly owned by the British. It wasn't a publicly owned company until 1941 when the U.S. forced them to sell publicly as a quid pro quo for lend-lease, which the Americans were not going to agree to. Cortol, actually, their big cash cow was the U.S.-based operations that they had, although they had huge operations in Great Britain and the famous plant in Ontario that they had as well, which they were not forced to sell, obviously, because that was Canada. I don't think anybody wants to bring back these dangerous and polluting manufacturing sites to the United States, but there still are sites that manufacture with carbon disulfide. The largest cellophane factory in the world is in Kansas, and the various sponge manufacturing sites are in the United States as well as in Europe. There's also a very big industry of a sort of relative of cellophane, which is used to make skinless weenies and other rayon film packaged sausages. Then the rayon film is removed and you have a skinless sausage.
So what are the current allowable levels of carbon disulfide in the workplaces of the world, and are they good enough?
It depends on where you are. So the United States, the OSHA limit is about 20 times higher than what our own governmental scientists recommend is safe. So the value in the OSHA law is 20 parts per million. California, which can make its own stricter standards, at least right now it can, the limit is 1 part per million. And in fact, the U.S. limit is so lax, it's only met, I think, by the standard in India. Even China has a somewhat stricter standard. And China, India, and Indonesia are some of the biggest current manufacturers of rayon fiber.
Yeah, I think about half the rayon in the world comes from China now.
It may be close to that. Oh, fiber we're talking about, yes.
Yeah. You know, digging around, I was looking at the disposal of rayon, and it turns out to biodegrade better than cotton. But then Wikipedia pointed me to a paper published in 2014 saying, quote, A recent ocean survey found that rayon contributed to 56.9% of the total fibers found in deep ocean areas, the rest being polyester, polyamides, acetate, and acrylic. So I'm wondering, how does so much rayon find its way into the ocean? Do you know?
I haven't a clue. I can say that the reason why it's biodegradable is it's regenerated cellulose. So the final product, the carbon disulfide, has all gone off into the air, often the air in which the workers are, but sometimes the ambient atmosphere. So that's why it's biodegradable, and that's why the rayon manufacturers and the viscose manufacturers market this material as being a green product, because it uses renewable cellulose rather than petroleum. It sort of ignores the carbon disulfide side of the equation, which is anything but a green product.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Dr. Paul David Blank. We're talking about the lethal history of viscose rayon. As you say in your book, Paul, Fake Silk, that there has been a TV expose on the mental health impacts on workers at the Chinese electronics makers like Foxconn, but the risks appear to be greater for rayon workers. Why do you think this toxic production scandal, I'd call it, has evaded public scrutiny for so long?
Well, it hasn't evaded public scrutiny, in fact, or medical knowledge. It's just that there's a cyclical amnesia, I would describe it as, for this industry. You know, when even in the 19th century, when it was used in the rubber industry, very quickly there was medical recognition within just a handful of years of the new technology. And there were exposés periodically in more popular media as well. So it's not really through lack of knowledge, it's through a disequilibrium of economics and power, I would say.
Is there a threat to people living around those industrial plants that use carbon disulfide?
Well, clearly there have been examples of release into the ambient atmosphere that's been substantive enough to be associated with suspect effects. The most famous case was actually in Alabama, where one of the last U.S.-based rayon factories was, and where local residents noted that their prized horses were dying off, and it was found at autopsy to be suspect carbon disulfide related. They sued the plant and lost on a small technicality of how the nuisance law was written or the timing of some other piece, but not on truly substantive grounds.
In your book, you described the modern production facilities of the Lenzing Group in Austria, and the carbon disulfide is carefully enclosed and vented for worker protection, but vented to where, and can you somehow collect and store it, or what happens to it?
Well, they try to the extent that they can to recycle it into the process, right? I mean, the motivation for many of the controls has not been purely worker safety, but it's that it's cheaper in the long run if you don't send all this chemical up the smokestacks, because it leaves the product and you can reuse it.
So, Paul Blank, how does carbon disulfide reemerge from the pesticides story?
Well, it has a long history as a pesticide. It was the preferred, although useless, agent to try to stem the phylloxera epidemic of the 19th century that wiped out much of the grape industry in France, and they used many tons of this stuff. But it persisted as a fumigant in the grain industry until the 1970s, when the EPA in the United States finally nixed it. And it's still a byproduct of certain other pesticides. It was also like the preferred gopher exterminating agent, because it's heavier than air, it's very volatile. So you pour a bunch of it down a gopher hole and plug it up, and it kills all the gophers. So, in fact, there was a famous case report, not famous, but an impressive case report, let's say, in California in the late 19th century, of two brothers who had 20 gallons of carbon disulfide that they were using to kill gophers, and it turned out there was a leak in the can, which they kept right near where they slept, and you know, they both went insane. One murdered somebody, and the other one just went crazy.
What's your impression of the health standards for carbon disulfide in China?
Well, on paper, they're better than the United States. What's actually going on in practice is almost anyone's guess. There are some very large foreign manufacturers there, but they have their own domestic companies as well.
And what other countries are currently manufacturing rayon?
Well, let's talk about who's manufacturing viscose. So viscose in general, as I said, there's big manufacturing of cellophane in the United States and elsewhere outside of Asia. The sausage casing business is huge in the United States, in Europe, in Mexico, I believe there's a big facility. And the sponge business is big everywhere. It's really just the textiles that have concentrated in the last few decades in China. India is huge, and probably their conditions are worse than China, would be my impression. There certainly has been almost no study there. And Indonesia, not known for its biomedical research or protection of anyone.
So is there a way around this? Is there a totally safe way to make rayon or cellophane?
Well, first of all, there are some non-carbon disulfide processes. One of the newer ones that's been introduced that's actually a viscose process uses a different chemical, but it really has very little human testing data on or animal testing data. So it's hard to know what the risk-benefit ratio might be, although it is, I grant you, it's hard to imagine a chemical worse than carbon disulfide. And then there are non-viscose rayon producing methods. In the beginning of the introduction of these first synthetics, in fact, viscose was just one of several, but most of the other ones have died out. The one that hasn't is something called cupramonium production of rayon, which is a kind of niche specialty fake silk that is the preferred lining of bespoke suits, for example. If you buy a really high-end Italian designer suit, it's probably got a viscose lining, which is cupramonium, or sometimes referred to as Bemberg silk, because the Bemberg company in Germany used to be the big producers of this. Now it's produced in Japan.
So how do you hope this book will be used? What's it going to do?
Well, I think it's a cautionary tale. So it gives people a sense of what questions they should be wondering about with any new technology. This, after all, was as highfalutin and new as anything else in its day. But in terms of the textile industry, also, I think consumers have to ask themselves, is it okay if what I wear is completely safe, but somebody had to risk their life making it? This is not just limited to viscose. We've seen an epidemic of silicosis in young persons sandblasting jeans to get a distressed look. And it's really parallel to the issue of, is it okay to get that cheap T-shirt that somebody made in a 10th floor sweatshop in Bangladesh that was about to collapse on them or be burned to death in the tradition of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire?
We have to own our clothes then.
Yes, and I think there is some movement, consumer movement, to demand verification that the methods of production for what they buy are inspected and meet some kind of minimal international standards.
Well, as we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to add, Paul?
Well, I think that it's just important to always remember that the tale that I tell is something that happened to real people. These were real lives that were damaged or lost, and we need to remember these people. It's important. Just even that act is important, to honor them.
I've just read the new book, Fake Silk, The Lethal History of Viscose Rayon. The author and our guest is M.D. Paul David Blank. Paul does clinical studies and research. Plus, he's the chair of occupational and environmental medicine at the University of California in San Francisco. You can find links to this book and the basic deadly chemistry of boiling down wood in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Dr. Paul Blank, thank you for sharing your time and for this warning.
Oh, I'm very happy to have done it.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.